I don't want to wake up Jennifer, so we're just going to do it with you.
Okay.
99.1 PLR, Chaz and AJ in the morning. AJ's got a bunch of stuff going on now.
I do.
You going for your shot today?
Yeah, I got to go.
What is this?
Okay, so today begins...
It's an AJ health update.
Right. Today, today begins 4 days of the shots that I have to take and the shots they give you. What it does is I'm being treated for multiple myeloma, by the way.
Hold on.
Okay.
And now an AJ health update.
Your medical moment. Yes, I'm trying to find out why I go. Anyway, no, so what happens? I'm being treated for multiple myeloma, and things are going really well. Knock wood.
Everyone asks about you.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
And you've gained weight. I say he sprung back like a flower getting water.
Okay. That's a good analogy. Yeah. I was pretty bad for a while. 134. Went from 188 to 134. Even I was like, what's that noise? Was my bones rattling?
No.
My car threw a rod.
Please tell me you used this on stage. That's a good one.
My car threw a rod. But when it happened was, so what's going on now is I did initial treatments. Everything's great with that. So now what they have to do is the next phase is they have to take stem cells out. They're going to take stem cells out of my body, freeze them.
Amazing
and
stuff
then,
they could do.
And then they replant them into you later on. So they're going to take them out, freeze them. So in order to get to those, they're in your bone marrow. So I have to begin these shots today for the next 4 days. You go in, you get a shot, and it actually forces the stem cell out of your bone marrow into your bloodstream. So 4 days
it's
of that.
Unbelievable.
4 days of that. And then starting Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I will not be here. They're going to do this thing where they put one intravenous in one arm and another one, and they filter. And they filter my blood through, and what they're doing is they're actually harvesting the stem cells out of my blood. And how I do exactly what they kind of catch them as they go by, and they store them.
Like Pac-Man.
And they store them. And they store them like
Pac-Man.
Exactly right. Kind of like that. Kind of like I'm a big video machine. But then they take those and they freeze them and harvest them. When they get enough of them, is when I stop. And they freeze them, and then later on, I have to do like two doses of the killer chemo, the chemo that like knocks you on your ass. I mean, it's like wham, like you go down. I've been doing chemo, but this is like the mother of all bombs chemo. This is to make sure it doesn't come back.
It's the Moab
yeah,
chemo.
Exactly. Yeah, so I do that, and then
so what happens after that?
And you do two of those?
That's when you lose your hair?
Yeah, my hair's going to go bye-bye for a little while, so yeah.
Can I tell you something? I think you're going to like not having hair.
You know what? Let's see what happens.
You have a nice skull for not having hair.
Not really. I got a
bump
in the back.
Some people got
I got a bump in the back. Like
yeah, but I can see that you have it shaved down. I can see it.
The shape of your head overall is not bad.
No, it's a good shape.
Some people have like a pointy head. I think I might. I'm not sure.
It wasn't cone head.
Jennifer has an oddly shaped skull.
Mask and some balls. Yeah, no. Yeah. I don't know. I kind of think like a taco chip. My head's kind of like... I used to bump my head a lot as a kid. It's a big surprise, right?
I'm shocked.
But, so my hair's going to go bye-bye for a little while. It does grow back.
Yeah, it does.
It does grow back.
But you might like it.
I might like it. Yeah. That's what happens. So,
it's a new look.
I will tell you.
It's a new look on a new night.
Right.
I will tell you, watching Amanda go through this, that you don't just lose the hair on your head. You lose all the hair.
Oh, good.
So, good for you.
Nice. Eyelashes will be gone. The hair in your nose will be gone.
What?
Any
that's
hair.
All good. The eyelashes,
it's all gone.
Funny. Yeah,
so how do I get my eyebrow? Like my eyebrows? So every time I get mad, I'm like, I got to draw a new one on.
Amanda had to draw hers on.
Now I'm happy.
Draw them on.
I'll take it to Sephora.
Like Kabuki yeah. Theater. We'll
get someone in here to draw them on.
It's not picky about the hair. It's like any hair.
I'll get
gone.
I'll get Lee press on eyebrows.
It might grow.
The hair between your butt cheeks will be gone.
Right?
That's good.
I don't have a very hairy butt. I will say that.
Really?
Yeah, I don't have a hairy back either. But, you know.
You're going to be like the Charlie Brown Christmas tree. You put it down and just... Everything falls off.
All right, so we'll need a dustbuster in the studio. Right? Yeah. So, and then after that, they reharvest they replant the stem cells in, and
that's why they take them out now. They want them healthy,
right?
Yeah. And they're going to dose you, and then they're going to put them back in, so your body recovers quicker. Right. That's awesome.
And then everything builds back up again. So,
well, they do that, and then you're going to have hernia surgery,
right?
Right?
Oh, I'm having hernia.
Forgot about that.
No, I'm doing the harvesting, then hernia surgery,
then hernia surgery, and then the blast.
Right. Because what happens is you can't do the hernia surgery during chemo because then you don't heal as much.
Oh yeah,
it kind of hurts. Hinders the healing process. So
your body's going through a lot.
Yeah. So basically, we've been in hospitals for a while. You know, quite a bit. So
wow.
Yeah.
Harold.
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 Hey, you're going to look like that guy from Police Academy. What was it? The lieutenant something or other?
You know, you don't have to call in every thought. No, sometimes it's okay if we just talk.
Captain Mauser.
Thank you, Harold.
Captain
By the
Mauser?
Way,
yeah.
Harold's the longest running phone caller of my radio career.
Oh,
he
yeah.
called on the overnights.
Wow.
When I was filling in.
Wow.
I was still part-time.
Wow.
Thank you, Harold.
Yeah, that's Captain Mauser, by the way.
You could pace yourself.
Because they put something in his, they put, what was it, super glue or something like that in his shampoo, and his hair got stuck, and his hand got stuck, and they had to have him to shave his head.
Got it.
Captain Mauser, yowza,
all right, here's
yowza.
Another long-running caller.
Uh-oh.
Beef Man.
Hey, guys, good morning.
Yo, Beef.
Hey. How you doing?
Just want to wish you good luck, AJ.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate
We're all
that, man.
Pulling for you, my yeah. man.
So far, yeah. so good, but thank you.
You have been kicking ass, man. It's yeah. not even good. You've been doing
Absolutely.
Great.
Yeah. Everyone that sees you on the screen here says you look great, AJ.
Oh, that's all.
Yeah.
That's all smiler, man.
Yep.
That's all. That,
no, we were all S-ing
all,
ourselves.
Yep.
December was a rough mm-hmm. month.
I
man.
Was S-ing myself, too.
Yeah.
Literally.
I was just quiet about it. I replaced the chair.
All right, man. Thank you.
I did replace the chair, though.
Thank you.
But, yes, that's what's going on. So that's next. So that starts today. I got to get a shot.
All right.
Yeah, so.
It's another part of the trip.
Yep.
Last leg,
the second leg. Second leg.
It's a long road.
Yeah. It is.
But you're tough ass, man.
So far, so good. You know, again.
Knock on wood.
It's all the doctors, man. It's all the doctors and nurses, man. Jennifer, been great, a huge help. I mean, there's no way in hell we've gotten this far without her.
Yeah, there was a time this week where they just, you know, you got.
I was sitting there waiting for a bone marrow biopsy.
Blasted with text.
I'm sitting there, and also my phone's going, bing, 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 bing. I'm like, what the hell's going on? I thought maybe you guys were all doing like a group text. That's how random they were coming
text.
In. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I'm looking, and it's like, Yale. I'm like, I said out loud, I'm like, I'm in the waiting room. I go, what the F is this? I didn't see the lady from the counter look over. I'm like, sorry, that was me. It was out loud, wasn't it?
Sorry.
Jennifer put that puzzle together for you.
Yeah, because it was all like one after the other, and they weren't even in order. And I'm sitting there going, what that? Like, I started freaking out. I'm like, help!
She made a little map for you.
Yes, she did. Schedule.
She's on the phone now, but you know, this is the end of the break, hon.
I know. I'm off today, and I'm just.
Say
I'm
goodbye.
Just waking up and.
Goodbye. Sleepy. Goodbye.
All hell broke loose in Guilford yesterday. The town of Guilford sent this out to parents. Earlier today, we received a call about a man with a gun running around a medical building in town. From the layperson's perspective, the Glock replica squirt gun and the manner in which it was being held appear to be real to the complainants. The gun and surveillance images also appear to be realistic. Per the building protocol, they placed the building in lockdown until it was safe. People in the building were fearing for the worst and calling family, telling them that they were in a lockdown and saying their goodbyes if the gunman entered the building. Family members began showing up in the area worried about their loved ones. As you can imagine, the police response was significant and the area was saturated with officers, clearing buildings and ensuring the suspect was identified and captured. With the understanding that the senior assassins game is in full swing, we also communicated with our school resource officer who was able to identify the person in the surveillance footage, handle the complaint, and ultimately put the complainant's mind at ease. In this case, no one was injured, but there was certainly the potential. Staff at the faculty experienced the level of trauma and were legitimately concerned for their safety. So is this a game, or is this really stupid?
Right. It's just very stupid.
Is it just kids being fun, or is this, like, really, really dangerous?
Very dangerous.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a concerned parent who thinks it's dumb, and we have an organizer of the game on the phone.
Okay.
We'll do one at a time here. Kurt.
Good morning.
Hey. How you doing? You're a parent?
I am.
You think this is dumb?
Well... let me just put it in context. I'm a retired firefighter paramedic.
Thank you.
And,
thank you, sir.
My very first call 10 minutes into my shift was a two-car crash head-on with six kids in it that we lost. And they were doing stupid things. And you take a fun game and you put kids who are not used to driving into that type of a game, quote unquote, game environment with testosterone and all the other stuff, and it's a recipe for disaster.
Was that accident a result of this senior assassins game?
That one was not, but dear friends of mine 15 or so years ago was. And they were speeding and lost control. And I will never forget the night in the hospital in New Haven. We were in one room. Another family was just over the other wall. And we had some good news. And all of us in this room were cheering. And then we saw the faces coming out of the other room. And the other kid in the vehicle had passed away. And in the same instant, we were joyous, and they had just lost their son all over a stupid game. Now, you know, my two cents as far as, you know, let the kids play, but eliminate the vehicle piece of it and put them in a geographical area so that everybody knows that this is a game,
right?
Instead of driving all over town.
Wow, the playing area, the playing field,
Those are actually pretty good ideas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Limit the space.
That's what my high school would do. The final four, they would release them to this park, J.B. Williams, and they would have to do the game there. But we did have the driving part. That was dangerous before.
So. Right. All right, Kurt, hold on one second, all right? Maddie, you're the organizer.
I am.
Okay. Of the Senior Assassins game in Guilford?
Oh, I'm not from Guilford. I'm over in New Haven County. I'm not going to disclose the name of my school just to protect my school and their privacy, since we're not technically affiliated with it if anything were to happen. But I'm the organizer of my Class of 2025 Senior Assassin game.
Okay. What did you think of what Kurt just said?
I completely agree with him. So when I constructed the rule book about a month ago, we eliminated the driving option. The only way to effectively get someone if you're in a vehicle is if it's completely in park or if the vehicle is off. We use an app called Splashin, which is basically a Life 360 app that parents use for their kids, but instead it's specifically designed for the Senior Assassin game. And through this, I can monitor everyone's locations and the speeds they're going. And I have very strict rules about being on the road because, for example, the first couple of days we started playing, it was torrentially downpouring, and it was very unsafe to drive, especially if you're going speeds chasing after people. So I was monitoring everyone's speeds, making sure everyone was safe, and I would call people, and I said, you are going too fast. If I catch you doing this again, I'm disqualifying you completely.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
You go, girl. Hey,
do you mind if I conference you in with Kurt?
No, go right ahead.
Okay, great. Hey, Kurt, what'd you think of that?
I think we're making some progress.
Good.
She sounds great, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like when I hear, we need more Maddies making the news.
Yeah, just
because when I hear her, I'm like, okay, this is who I want to hear from, not the knuckleheads who are sticking paper clips in Chromebooks.
Yes,
okay?
Exactly right. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, she's no knucklehead. Yeah, no.
Right.
Yeah.
No, right. I agree, and you know, having been through this and death over a stupid game. And you know, as I said, you put vehicles together and testosterone in a game like this, and it's problems. And I'm glad Maddie took the vehicles out of the equation.
That's
good.
Great. Hey, Maddie, what are you doing with the final four? Are you putting them in a certain location?
So we actually had a schedule list of, hey, so this is week one, week two, week three, week four, and I anticipated not that many people to get eliminated by week one, and there's 80 kids involved in our school's game, and it kind of got down to about 26 in the first week. So we're going to try to do like a final four game or just like a mass elimination game at our local town field. It's either going to be like a version of a scavenger hunt or a form of manhunt. And they all have to record each other getting out. So I have physical proof of it.
Awesome. Nice. Kurt, what do you think?
I think we're making great progress. Good job, Maddie.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. Time. Yep.
Hey, Kurt, thanks for coming on. Thanks for being a paramedic.
Yeah. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Maddie, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, great job.
Of course. Thank you. Ahead.
Thank you.
All right. We got peace in the Middle East.
Nice.
I love that.
Wow. Look at that.
I said, let's call Palestine and Israel right now. We can do this. We got this.
No, Maddie can solve it.
You know, we need more smart kids like that leading
and
making the news.
A lot of thought process.
All the knuckleheads make the news. We need the Maddies making news.
There are smart ones out there,
there are smart ones out there.
She's smart enough to stay out of the news.
Exactly.
Right. The way she protected the school, she's immediately. Like, I don't want to be involved with that. I was like, she's so smart.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
We got a walking, talking hero in studio here.
We do.
Detective Martin Padsiad.
Yes, sir.
But close.
Thank you for what you do, man.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
I recently
no hero.
I know you guys don't like to hear that.
Why you say it though?
You know, I don't know. When you put on a gun every morning and a bulletproof vest, because the people you're dealing with might be shooting at you.
Yeah.
So you can make people you never met safe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's hero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not throwing that around.
No.
But I get it. Thank you for what you do.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Have you ever, how many murder investigations do you think you've had?
Overall as a department or?
You.
For me. I've been involved in quite a few as a caseload myself, because I was recently transferred to major crimes. I had, I think, now four. You know, but we have a pretty large team.
Right.
We average, unfortunately, double digits pretty much every year. You know, 2011 was a really bad year for us in the city. That was the highest in my career, which is 34.
Which year?
2011.
2011.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had 34 that year.
Wow.
So,
that's a lot.
Yeah. And we've been on a steady decline since then for a lot of reasons. You know, policing's changing, technology's changing. So the way that the technology that we're using to solve those, we're just a lot faster at it nowadays.
Yeah, I was in that control room. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
They have all these cameras and nice. The whole thing.
They put in my house
too many secrets away, but it's pretty cool. It's a computer system that communicates very quickly important information to the people on the ground.
That's key. Yeah.
Yeah. You ever come up on a murder scene and it looked like an accident, then it turns out to be a murder?
Of course, it could always look that way.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what happened. And even an accident, you know, if you have like a hit and run, that's technically still a homicide.
Yeah.
Right. Is it really?
Well, yeah, you investigated just like a homicide. I mean, somebody killed somebody and left the scene.
And left.
Yeah. Correct. So, I mean, we don't handle those in major crimes. We're lucky we have an accident reconstruction team and they handle those, but they work those just
I'll
like
you. I bet
you
they're better than the accident reconstruction team that's involved in the Karen Reed case.
Right.
Have you seen any of that?
Right.
I have watched some of the trial. Yeah.
Wow. That's really, I feel bad. I'm always, you know, I always root for the cops. They're not doing a good job in this one.
No.
So have you ever had it the opposite, where you thought it was an accident, turned out to be a murder?
I have not. I personally, I have not. I'm sure that there's been cases within the department, you know, where we have seen that. It's hard to determine, right? Because when a person passes away, or, you know, they're deceased, you look at that crime scene. We treat even what we consider like natural suspicious deaths as homicides until
it's a murder till it's not.
Pretty much until the medical examiner tells us, you know, otherwise. Yeah, correct. Yeah. And, you know, and it's tough nowadays, especially with, you know, overdoses kind of like on the rise.
Oh.
You get to some of those scenes and, you know, it's unclear.
That's probably the way to murder someone, right?
Like make them OD?
Well, give them so much drugs they pass out.
Right.
Then you shoot them up again.
Right.
And then it's like, you know, put their hand on a needle or whatever.
Yeah, but
I don't want to give anyone any ideas.
But then I watched enough forensic files. It would be the angle, though, the needle went in, though. They could have struck that, you know.
Yeah,
one's going to investigate that.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing is, I don't think you're going to get down to the brass tacks of the angle of the needle.
Right.
You know, it's more like motive. Who is
I saw Quincy.
Yeah.
And even technology there, you know, I mean, between DNA, phone technology, you know, we could put people on the scene that typically wouldn't be on the scene.
That's right.
Things, yeah.
That helps a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you ever had one that you thought was a murder, then the medical examiner said, nope, it was something else? And you're like, really?
So here's the thing. I mean, honestly, you try to be as unbiased as possible.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you have experience and you look at certain things and, you know, you look at it through a certain lens. But you really, really, when you get there, you really want to be unbiased. Because if you think it's an accident or you think it's a homicide, you end up doing different things. So you just try to, if you go in there with the same neutral kind of approach and always treated the same way, that checklist is always there and you have less of a chance of making any mistakes. I mean, you're going to make them. There's no doubt about it. You know, I came up under who was the assistant chief of the bureau for a while, Bert Etienne, who's also a homicide detective. And, you know, he drilled that into us. You get there, you just look at it through the most neutral lens you can. What you have and you deal with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, more so you get on, as a patrol officer, you get on car accidents and you go, what happened?
Right.
Right. cars end up a weird way.
How did they manage to do this?
Right. Correct. So I think you see it more in that, where you're completely like baffled as to how this happened. It's like when you see a kid put his head through like...
the fence?
Yeah.
And it won't come back
out. I was like,
how did you get it through? Have you rolled up on any
No,
of this?
Thank God I have not. No.
I always say, leave the kid there.
Right. They'll figure it out. They got
no one will ever do it again.
Right. I'll throw you some oil, some butter, work on it.
We're just going to sit down, have an ice cream cone in front of them.
Yeah. Just leave them right there.
I'm going to watch
when those kids crawl into the claw machines.
Yes.
Oh, it happened just once a year.
Right.
They're in there.
Yeah.
They're like, leave them in there.
Exactly.
Look, he's happy.
Give the parents a roll of quarters and get the hard way.
Right. Just leave them in there and no one will ever do that again.
When he gets thinner, it'll be easier to pick up.
What is a case that sticks with you?
I don't really have cases that stick with me. I have cases that I've...
That's probably a good thing for your mental health.
Correct, right?
Yeah.
Which is a huge thing we're learning now with the new generation of policing, right? This mental health aspect. So I don't, the cases that stick with you, you don't like to talk about, or there may be things that you don't, they're usually
it's
not.
Probably not a good question.
Well, no, it's fine. No, don't worry about it. Those are usually not positives. They're usually like negative things.
Right.
There's cases that I've worked on, that were awesome. You know, that I was really proud to be a part of. I did work a RICO case into Red Side Guerrilla.
What does that mean?
Racketeering. Basically, we use the same federal laws that they use for the mafia to do a case into a gang.
Is there still a mafia?
I don't know. I don't work organized crime.
Okay. That's a good
People
answer.
Say yes.
It got very quiet after John Gotti. I think everyone was like, maybe...
Yeah, cool out for a while.
We don't want to do this whole celebrity mafia guy thing.
Don't need to know my name.
Yeah. Right.
I think what happens is we adjust in law enforcement. Criminal organizations adjust the same way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They learn Retool. The same way as we do. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So I don't know. Unfortunately, I don't work those cases. But that was probably one of the coolest cases I worked on just because we ended up solving 10 cold case homicides with that case.
Wow.
Yeah, which is kind of a cool thing, and that was the first homicide that I responded to as a rookie police officer we solved in that case.
Oh, so later on.
Yeah, years later, yeah. And the two...
How many years between you being a rookie and rolling up on that one?
That was like 2009, and we completed that case, I want to say like 2015 or so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the two people that ran that case, and I was part of that team, were Paul DeAndrea, detective with New Haven Police Department. He's since retired, and Dan Prather, who was an ATF agent there. And it was awesome. It was a really long case. We worked that gang actually here in New Haven.
You mean it's not a 30-minute episode?
No.
Really?
Yeah. No.
A little sound of...
My crime at the beginning, a little sound effect.
Right. Right.
And then at the
tied
end...
Up at the end.
Yep. No.
Conviction.
Right, no. The credits rolling. Yep.
No, we all carry a caseload of cold cases. Even the things that we didn't work. I have one... 2008, 2005.
Yeah.
So we all pick up old files to see if we could find something new in them. Or was there DNA that we didn't test, or did DNA technology change now that we could test?
Right.
So we do.
Sometimes you just look at a picture that was taken at the scene. You see one little thing.
Correct.
And it's
No.
That's fresh eyes.
Correct.
Like, wait, what's that?
Correct. Yeah. That's definitely a thing. I'm involved in a case now. I don't want to talk too much about it because it's another department's case, but it's a murder of a child. Going back into the 80s.
Ouch.
Yep. And they're revisiting the case. And my strong point is kind of interviewing. So they involved me on that sense. Because, if you're looking at the 80s, evidence, you're not going to get new evidence. So really what it comes down to
is... Were you collecting DNA back then? You were collecting items.
Well, I was 5 years old.
Well, you still collected things.
And you had
a beard, too. Right,
and I was still in communist Poland. So
Is that right?
Yeah. I came here in 85,
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have to escape or?
So my dad did. He got deported twice. He came back.
Deported from here?
Yes. Yeah.
And sent back?
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. You would think we'd be like, hey, you got away.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
Right. Yeah.
Welcome to America.
Yes.
Yeah. No. So in 85, I came here. So in 81, I don't know what they were doing. But as far as, just from reading books, DNA was not a thing, And so it's not that it wasn't collected. It's just the way that evidence was preserved at that time.
Oh.
Now, unless you have a lot of it, it deteriorated. DNA is not like, boom, it's there. Now, the way we collect it, sure, we'll preserve it. And two, when you test DNA, you have to remember you are now taking some of that sample and you can't get it back.
That's it.
Yeah.
So there's that, they have a process now where they can double it.
Yep, I'm assuming.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they could take a little sample, they could double it.
Right.
It's almost like a recording, but it's not as good as the original.
Yeah, right.
So you lose the percentage of certainty.
Correct. Yeah. Like synthesizing.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So this RICO case, how many cases did you say? Was it 10?
It ended up being like 10 cold case homicides. And I mean, it was a slew of shootings at the time. And the beginning kind of the inception.
So that was an organized crime in New Haven?
Yeah, so it was a gang. It was a regular street gang, but we used these particular racketeering charges to target this gang.
Right.
And you know, it was great, man. It was a great case to be a part of. I didn't understand at that time when I was a part of that team, like how big this case was. And I'm just like, this is fun.
Yeah.
You know, and we were...
Did you have like the board with the string?
We did. It was
really?
No strings.
So,
yeah.
That's a real thing.
Yeah,
cool.
We weren't doing strings. You know, we were doing more charts. But we did at that time. We were printing.
Was there a
charts.
Face on top of the pyramid? Like this is the guy,
right?
Yeah, so we're gonna work our way through this to
get to
that
Mr. Big.
Yeah, you have to go undercover.
No, not for that case. The funny thing is, in that case, the guy that we started the case for, that was the top. He ended up becoming our number one cooperator.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll be honest with you. I don't think if we had what we call a flip, but if we had him flipped him in that interview room to cooperate, I don't know if we would have been as successful as we were with that case. Mm. But he became our main cooperator.
That was the key.
Yeah, and we ran that case in two states.
How many years was he looking at before he flipped?
I mean, so don't quote me because I'm not an attorney or prosecutor.
But
my understanding is under a RICO case, your first homicide is life without parole in the feds. Yeah.
Okay.
And if you have multiple, now you're looking at the death penalty. So
this guy was down towards the bottom of the pyramid, but he was looking
he was at the top of the pyramid. Yeah. As far as violence. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he got you to the top of the brains.
Did. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And then, you know, once that happened, there was no trials in that. Everybody ended up cooperating. And we actually ran it in two
states. That must be tough to go home and not be able to talk about it. You're like, oh, my God, this is so cool.
I know it's I can't tell you. I can't tell you. Gasp, I can't tell you.
Yeah.
Because they sometimes tap your phones, right?
No, I don't.
Not this street gang, but if you were doing like a...
No, I mean, I don't think that happened. I mean, maybe.
They never tap
Not
back.
At my level. I mean, I don't know what they think they're going to hear on my phone, but...
Right.
You know, it never happens at my level, but we did do a wiretap on that case. We went up on a wiretap for about 30 days and I've been a part of a few of those and the best way
That's
to...
long and tedious, right? You have to listen to a lot of boring conversations,
right?
What's the weirdest thing you heard on a wiretap?
I can't even say.
Really?
No.
On a break.
Yeah. It's a grocery list, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. Boy, he's got some weird sexual fantasies. We have New Haven Police Detective Martin Patsiad, Major Crimes Unit, in studio. They're looking for some good people.
Yes.
It's a great job.
Yeah.
It's an honorable job.
Very.
Great pay, great benefits.
Right, and cool.
And you work as many hours as you want, right?
Yep. Yeah, currently, we're short. You're definitely going to be able to make a very good living. We have a application deadline May 20th. We're starting our academy, I believe, June 4th. But we also send to what we call satellite academies, which is all over the state. By 2028, the base salary is going to be up to, for a patrol officer, $99,000.
Wow.
That'll be base.
That's base.
That's not overtime.
Yeah,
that's
correct.
Base.
Yep. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's pretty much across the board. And the great thing about being in...
Do you need any college for that?
You don't. And the great thing with being in New Haven, like, I look at my career, I never thought I'd be sitting here, right, 17 years later.
Yeah.
Or even... being a detective, but the great thing about New Haven, because we're such a large department, and we have 70 supervisors alone, departments don't have 70 cops, is that there's a lot of movement, there's a lot of opportunities. You know, we have all the specialized units, you know, traffic, SROs, SWAT team, we have it all. We have officers in every single federal agency as task force officers, like I was with the ATF,
yeah.
You know, ATF, FBI, US Marshals, DEA. So it's really a fun job. Like, I had a great time. You know, it's coming to an end for me. I'm, you know, probably going to leave at 20 years, but man, but I am going to miss it. There's other opportunities for me out there that I'm going to take, but
like what?
Yeah.
Probably consult and teach.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to enjoy time with my kids.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Right? How old are they?
So I have a 8-year-old and then I have my stepson will be 15 and I have a stepdaughter 18.
Okay.
Wow. Yep.
Yeah.
So I want to enjoy that time.
You want to hang. Yeah.
Yeah.
You look young. You get to retire.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
Yes.
What's the lowest age you could become a police?
So
21?
21 to become a police officer.
You do 20 years, you're 41.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Pension.
Yep.
Yep. Healthcare.
You do another job.
And
afterwards.
You're on to the next career.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, or you stay longer and, you know, keep working it.
But,
but honestly, I've been very, very fortunate to go to New Haven. It really worked out for me. And I never, ever thought that I would get to do the things that I got to do. And I don't have a college degree. You know, I'm blue collar family.
Yeah, no, I got you.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It really worked out for me.
Well, yeah, no college debt.
Nope.
Yeah.
Right.
Nope.
No student loan paid
for you. You know, Emily had some good questions during the break because she dates men. Right. She's like, how do you know someone's lying?
Right. What's the body like?
Yeah, you interrogate people, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I interview people. I don't like the word interrogation.
Interview.
Interview. Right. Right.
I think it has a negative connotation.
It does.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and people like using it. But for us, it's just an interview or a conversation. And when it comes to body language, I think there's not a template, right? People, like, you watch these YouTube videos, like, if they touch their nose, they do this.
Right.
What if they're just nose itches, right?
Yeah. You don't know.
So I think, you know, kind of what I tell police academy recruits or detectives if we're training them is I look for a pattern of behaviors as a response to a specific stimulus, right? So if you're dating somebody and you say to them, for example, well, are you married? If they give you any other answer, but no, they probably are.
Okay. Yeah, been there.
Right.
Right. Yep. The more words.
Right.
Yeah. Or qualifying statements like I swear to God. Or I kind of say if they are trying to convince you rather than convey information. So I ask for information, but you're trying to convince me in the sense of like, I would never do that. Or, you know, before you say anything,
I swear.
Why are you asking me?
Yeah.
Why, so you know?
Those things. And I think women are actually better at doing that.
Yeah. And we're pretty intuitive.
That's what I mean.
What I have
So you have the five senses.
Yeah.
We use the five senses. You guys have the sixth one, which is intuition. Mm-hmm. You know, we as men are like, intuition is.
We have and we know that about women. So when we get asked the question, we're like,
yeah.
You know, I kind of say, if you call home and your kids pick up the phone, you're like, hey, is your room clean? And it's anything but a yes.
Yes.
It's a no.
Right. Exactly.
Well, when I came home, no.
Right. No.
Yep.
It's pretty much done at that.
I got a lot of homework.
I was trying to put together a 50th for Jennifer, and I didn't want to place myself in Fairfield. So I said, she said, where'd you go for lunch? I said, I went with Young Chaz to this restaurant in Waterbury. I forgot the name.
Yeah.
And she said, what did you have?
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh. The process began.
I'm like, cheeseburger. And she said, they don't serve cheeseburgers there.
So
I'm like,
it's an Italian restaurant.
I can't even lie right.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, you know why? Because she knows your baseline. So even if you didn't add any extra words, just a slowdown of how you say it, it triggers something. I'll give you an example. You guys have, anybody have a dog here?
Yeah.
How do you talk to your dog?
Oh, like
as a baby. Yeah.
Okay. So like change the tone, right? Like I have a dog, you know, her name is Bella, and I'm like, oh, come here, Bella.
Yeah.
Right. But if you change the tone of that, it's a different message. Right? If I turn around and go, hey, Bella. So those subtle,
she might get nervous.
Correct.
Bella, who ate the leftovers?
So those subtle changes, because she knows your baseline so well,
right?
They'll pick up subconsciously, like not even know, like what, that wasn't right. There's not a thought process in her head. She just knows you're.
Yeah.
So next time, Chesco, I went a cheeseburger. I had a cheeseburger.
No, I should have thought it out, really.
I had a cheeseburger.
The problem is if you rehearse it, right?
Then it's
automatic. And the other thing is if I ask you about an event, like getting up this morning and you tell it to me, if I ask you to repeat it, as you're repeating, you remember other things and you're going to add them.
Oh.
If you rehearse it, you stick to that rehearsal. So it becomes very automatic. So people that repeat a story four or five times and it never absolutely, there's no change whatsoever.
What's the longest interview you had with a defendant?
I've probably sat like a good 6-7 hours sometimes.
Man. Wow.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
At that point, they're just like, all right, I got to tell you whatever. Yeah. I don't think
it's that. You play this like cyclic game where you're like talking about what you want to talk about. They go somewhere else. You kind of come back and, you know, depends on your partner. And I was very lucky. I had some great, great interviewing partners. Josh Kyle's one of them. Paul DeAndre, the one that I work
with. Yeah.
Phenomenal. Like you put them in a room. We're very conversational. It's not this bad cop, good cop. We don't do that. Our interviews are
one stays quieter, though, right? One is lead.
Yeah, lead dog.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One of you is going to definitely lead, and the other one's going to be kind of like the number two guy, and, you know, he's going to jump in. And sometimes as the lead, like, you hit a wall, right? And you turn around and you
and
know.
Just look and say, you give them that look.
I literally
and they
have, yeah.
Like, you got anything?
Yeah, I literally have gone like, hey, you.
Yeah,
go?
You jump in for a minute here. Yeah, I need to gather my thoughts.
Yeah, so it's very normal.
We got to have you back just to talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we'll have you question AJ.
Oh, he's done.
Yeah, done. All right. Yeah,
just talk like this.
Thanks to you and everyone in uniform for what they do for us every day. Appreciate you. We're going to link up the New Haven Police Department thingy on WPLR.com if you're interested in doing something cool and get good money and do something honorable and help the community.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah, you could jump on our website, beanewhavencop.com. That's our new
website. A great website.
Yeah,
that's easy to remember. See, I can get that.
Jump on there and all the information is on there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So if you're a Knicks fan, you knew it wasn't going to be easy.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Let's bring on Paul Verzi, super comedian and super Knicks fan. Good morning.
What's up, guys?
Morning.
What up, Paul?
You can hear. You can hear that little tone.
Yeah.
We had a homicide detective in here just talking about the bass setting of a person's voice.
Right.
We could hear yours is off.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I got all the feels right now. I'm sick. You feel like we have control of it. We're 3-1. You know, their star player is down. We're in Boston. We could kind of put the nail in the coffin. First half going good. And then, and can Karl Anthony Towns, I don't know if you guys are watching, is Karl Anthony Towns just going to start the game tomorrow with 2 fouls? He should just start the game with 2 fouls so I don't have to scream at the TV saying, how do you have 2 fouls in the first 5 minutes of the game? So that's driving me nuts. But that being said, first of all, I don't need this in my life, guys. I'm a grown man with 2 kids, and I was at the comedy club last night, and they actually set up a nice green room for us to watch the game. And, the drive home sucked, but I'm still very optimistic that we can close it out in the Garden tomorrow night.
That's even better, isn't it?
At home, yeah.
Would you rather have it at home or at the Garden?
Just get over it.
At the TD Garden, right? It's TD Garden?
They're both the Garden. Different
both
gardens.
The Garden, yeah.
Right.
Well, let's be honest. There's one real Garden.
There's one real
That's
Garden.
Right.
Yeah. Frank Sinatra didn't sing in that dump.
Exactly.
Frank Sinatra, Muhammad Ali, that's Madison Square Garden. But they haven't celebrated a closeout series in the playoffs at Madison Square Garden in 24 years. So that's something that we could look forward to tomorrow night. And I got to say, I'm not one of these like, oh, it's all fixed and rigged. Okay. But can I be honest with you? I've never, and I actually asked this on Twitter last night, I've never seen a star player, that and Jalen Brunson, I've never seen a star player get 5 fouls in 9 minutes. He got 5 fouls all in the third quarter, which seemed very, I don't know.
It's suspicious,
It is suspicious
at
and
best.
Bizarre. And here's the other thing. The other NBA series are all wrapped up.
They're done.
Maybe they don't want this one to, because if this one's wrapped up, then the NBA's got nothing till Monday or whatever. So maybe, I don't know, but let me just tell you this. It's going to be the most anxiety I've had. I don't need this. I don't need this. They have to do it tomorrow.
Right.
Because if they lose tomorrow, I'm going to be throwing up. I don't even know if I can watch on Monday.
Gotcha.
So,
I want to – Paul Verzi's on, super Knick fan, and I just want to play a clip from a reaction video he made for us last night after the game. Here's the best clip.
Oh.
I hear the asthma.
That was a reaction.
Heartburn.
Nice.
Is right.
That's it all in one word. One sound.
You summed it up right in the first second.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize that was just so honest. I didn't even realize because I just wanted it to be over. But I will say this. 7th Avenue, New York City, tomorrow night. The game starts at 8. I'm hoping by 11:30 there's a party in the streets and we can, be in the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time in 24 years.
24
and,
years.
Wow. Yeah, it's really amazing, right? I was in high school. I was my son's. The craziest thing is my son is about to turn 16. He's 15 years old. He'll be 16 on the 29th. That's around the time that I, that's around the time that the Knicks were, you know, give or take a couple years when I was a kid, same thing. And I told him, I said, you're seeing the stress that I went through with Patrick Ewing. You're getting your dose of it now, but we're actually maybe even a better team. So
you don't want to look too far ahead either, but the team everyone thought was going to advance didn't. So, like, you thought you were going to have this really tough road in the East. Like, Boston's a tough team. They lost their best player, as you mentioned. And then everybody thought it was going to be this Cleveland team who kind of, like, steamrolled through the regular season. They're gone. So it's a different team, and you almost feel like, wow, if there's a year, it can happen. Kind of sail through. Yeah. Like, you know, maybe it could happen.
What do you think?
This is how first of all, that's perfect. But here's how delusional. Now I'm so delusional that I'm going like, all right, so if we get past Boston, we got the revenge series against Indy. We were hurt last year against Indy, so we beat Indy. Now we're in the finals. I don't want to play OKC because they're the scariest team. But I actually was said to myself, and this is crazy and stupid of me, but I just go, you know, should we go? I swear to God, I was like, should I take my son to the parade? I don't know if I should go.
You're there.
Nice.
And I'm like, no, you gotta, you know, really pump the brakes on that. But yeah, and here's the greatest part.
Hold it, wait a minute. Why should you pump the brakes?
Yeah.
If Tiger Woods could visualize a shot before he makes it.
Right.
Right? And if you visualize yourself making that home run.
Right.
That wins the World Series for your team.
It helps.
Why wouldn't a fan visualize the parade?
Exactly.
Because it hurts if it doesn't happen.
Okay. Here's why.
Because Tiger Woods is a world-class athlete, and I'm a 5'8" middle-aged father.
Okay.
And that's the same, right? Okay, just double check.
I love the realness.
I love it.
I'm a 5'8" middle-aged father who tells penis jokes for a living.
Almost the same.
Paul Verzi's
on. The athlete should be delusional, not the fan.
Gotcha. Paul Verzi's on, and dude, we love it, and good luck to you and your boy. I hope it all works out
for
you.
That'd be nice.
I appreciate you guys, and I'll be honest. Usually when I'm not plugging something, I don't do radio. For you guys, I'll do it.
Thank you.
How about we talk next time they win? How about we get me on the phone after a win instead of a loss?
Okay.
All right, so...
That'd be cool.
It'll sound different, Paul.
They're playing tomorrow night?
Yeah, so it might have to be Monday.
It'll be Monday.
Monday, right.
We'll do... Listen, guys, thank you guys so much for having me, man. Enjoy tomorrow night. Hopefully go Knicks.
Yeah, we're going to link up everything.
Hopefully go Knicks.
That's not bad.
All right, we're going to link up all Paul Verzi stuff on WPLR.com. Follow this guy. Go see this guy.
Yes.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, guys.
Bye,
guys.
Brother. 99.1 PLR, Chaz and AJ in the morning. We'll start with the Foo Fighters. They announced their first show of 2025. Let's ask Jimmy Koplik, Live Nation, if there's any chance of them coming back to Connecticut. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I think there's a chance. I believe they're going to look at an American tour, and if they do, they've always favored Connecticut since we've re-engaged our relationship with them at Sound on Sound back a few years ago, even though they didn't show up. And the fact that they didn't show up.
Yeah, he owes you one.
Yep. Yeah, come on, Davey.
I think they owe us, so I think we have a chance. I'll do my begging. I'm good at begging.
Cool.
He had a great experience. Well, the band had a great experience at the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater.
Right.
Yes.
And then so great that they're like, yeah, we'll come back and do your festival.
Yeah.
And then, you know, things happen.
Yeah.
Didn't play. So now he owes you one.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think we have a good chance. I'm not working on it, so I don't want to tease anybody.
Right.
But,
yeah.
I do believe that at some point, they'll tour the States now that we know they're back together again. And, you know, they didn't show up in Connecticut, and I think that means something to Dave. Dave's a good guy.
When do you think you would know?
Well, I hope to know it's middle of May. I hope the next few weeks.
Nice. That seems like something simmering.
Right.
All right, let's talk about this Live Nation $30 ticket offer.
Yes. We have disengaged Concert Week and made it better, in my opinion, because it's not only a week. It will last as long as tickets go.
Wow.
So
wow.
It's a much improved program, in my opinion. And we have lots of tickets available for lots of shows starting next Wednesday for sale, and $30 all in. And
that's all in.
All in.
All in.
Damn, man.
Including Ticketmaster service charge.
Wow.
All in. So, and we, what I love about it is that it, we don't have a cutoff date. The cutoff date really is when we run out of tickets for each particular show. So some shows might go into late May, early June. Who knows when it will end? I don't know. But I like it better because there's not that that cutoff date. And, you know, if there's still tickets in June and people want to buy a $30 ticket in June, we will be able to sell it to them.
Nice.
I'll give you a couple from the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater. Counting Crows, Rick Springfield, Brad Paisley, Primus, Chicago, Little Big Town, Goo Goo Dolls, Britt Floyd, James Taylor, Papa Roach, Hailstorm, Melissa Etheridge, and more.
Wow.
I heard this band and more.
Yeah.
Awesome.
They're fantastic.
Well, there are more. I can mention one more now.
Oh, yeah?
Styx.
Nice. Ooh.
Yep. So we just added Styx. We have a few more days before we go on sale next Wednesday. We're going to try to add a few more.
Excellent.
And then at Xfinity, Creed, Nelly, Pantera, Luke Bryan, the Outlaw Music Festival.
Oh, wow. Big.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That has to be the best $30 ticket in the country.
Seriously.
Yeah, really. Can you imagine that?
That's right?
Sheryl Crow, Bob Dylan, Willie Nelson. That's great.
$30.
$30.
Jimmy, that's 1977 pricing.
Yes, it is. I wish my body was 1977 body.
I can afford to buy weed.
All right, so Foo Fighters, maybe. And $30 ticket week begins next Wednesday. Tons of tickets. And where do you go for more information?
Well, you just have to go onto our each venue website, and we'll give you all the information on each venue website, whether it be Xfinity or Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater.
Anything for Oakdale or Mohegan?
No, this is only an outdoor program.
Oh, okay.
In Connecticut, it's an outdoor program.
Gotcha.
Mohegan's Sun has never participated in it, not by because they didn't want to. We've never asked them. It's they promote themselves. We book the shows there, but they promote the shows themselves there. And we looked at Oakdale, and, you know, maybe we'll do something a little later after this sort of peaks out, but no theaters in this program.
Gotcha.
All right. It's on WPLR.com. Get the link.
Yeah.
Do it.
Jazz and AJ.
All right. I'm going to ask Jimmy some of the odd things he had to send people out to get for some of these great acts.
Cool.
And if you want to call in something that you will never forget seeing at a concert, whether it was on stage, backstage, side stage, outside,
someone's
in a bathroom.
Right.
203-882-9757. You tell us that, then Jimmy will give us a story about that artist from his vast collection of memories.
Yes.
203-882-9757. Jimmy Coplick, Live Nation on the show, and I will see him tonight at the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater for a private party celebrating the fifth season.
Yay.
Yes, very excited about it.
Pretty nuts.
Yes.
It went by fast.
It did.
I thought it went by real fast, too. What does that mean? I think as you get older, things move faster. But time moves faster.
Well, we were talking about this when you had summer vacation when you were 10.
Yeah.
That seemed like a long time because it was such a big portion of your life.
Yeah.
Because you'd only been around for 10 years, so 2 months seemed like...
Wow.
A decade. Chunk.
Exactly, yes.
Now, 5 years seems like a flash because we have had racked up so many years.
Yeah, that might be it.
Or it could be we had so much fun going to all these concerts.
Exactly. It just flew by. It flew by. Yeah.
Pandemic makes time weird, too.
Yeah, building an amphitheater in a pandemic.
Yeah.
Not easy.
That was weird.
But you guys made it look easy.
You did.
Well, we got lucky in a way because if we had opened up in 2020, I think it was, we were going to open up. We could not have made it as nice as we did. Giving us the extra year and a half to build it really made it easier for us. And making it easier for us made it nicer for everybody. We were able to finish things we probably wouldn't have finished. We might not have done certain things that we didn't have time to do that we ended up doing, which was nice.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Jeremy and Wilkett.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
All right, so my 12th birthday, my brother brought me to my first concert at the Old Meadows and there was a big fire there during the Rage Against the Machine concert.
Oh.
Ew.
Sounds cool.
It was 97.
Jimmy's eye just twitched.
Right. Forrest Whitaker. Yep.
No, that was a bad moment. That was 97.
Yeah, 97. Yep.
What happened, Jimmy?
Well, it was Wu-Tang Clan and Rage Against the Machine.
Right.
And between Wu-Tang Clan and Rage Against the Machine, the lawn people decided it would be a fabulous idea to tear up the lawn, throw sod at everybody in the shed, because the lawn people got pissed at the people in the shed that they got better seats. So they sort of flipping sod into the shed. It had rained, so the sod was very heavy and was starting to hurt people. And the lawn people decided to have a little more fun and set my fence on fire.
Oh. Oof.
Yeah, it was very nice.
Right.
And I ran up to the lawn. I was still young then.
Right.
And I'm running, saying, stop burning my venue. Stop it. I'm screaming at everybody.
Yeah.
And nobody would listen to me. And so I had about $55,000 worth of damage in 1997. We actually had a show the next day, and I had no fence in the back for the lawn.
Right.
Now, there's a big pitch in the back, so it wasn't that bad that I didn't have a fence, because if people fell out, want to leave the back end, or they couldn't come up the hill to get in.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but I really had a real problem getting the fence back up in time, and it was probably the biggest riot I've ever had in the venue.
Wow. Nice.
And the next day, the Hartford Courant runs a headline, Race Riot at the Meadows.
Really?
It was still called the Meadows, Jeremy. You're right. It was still called the Meadows in 97. And I called up the Hartford Courant, and I said, I was on that lawn. It was a bunch of white people.
Right.
I mean, Wu-Tang Clan was on the show, they said. I said, but it was white people. It wasn't a race riot.
Yeah.
It was white people that were burning down the fence.
Yeah.
It was not black people.
Right.
So they got pissed at me, and they wrote a real nasty editorial at me saying that I, ran an unsafe venue, which, by the way, the Hartford police were there, so I don't think how unsafe it was.
Right.
But they went after me because I disputed their headline. So it became a whole political mess. Had to go to the mayor, had to go to the governor at the time, who was Governor Rowland, who fixed everything up, thank goodness. But
get a fence for you.
Yeah, I wish. Yeah, I need a fence company. So it was a real mess. That was, and you were 12, Jeremy. Oh my God.
Right.
Yeah.
I hope he came back to another show after that. Right. <He's been
laughs> stayed away.
Oh,
since
I've been to many. Yeah.
Right.
I lucked out. My brother's buddy got sick the day before, so he asked me if I wanted to go.
Nice.
See how great life is? I got lucky. I got to go to a riot at a concert.
Right. That was your introduction to music.
Right. Thanks for bringing that up, Jeremy.
Jeremy.
I can tell you, I wasn't one of the ones burning it down for you.
All right. That's very good.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Jeremy.
You get to come back again
that.
Then.
Of course.
Yes. Nice.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Hey.
Sorry, man.
Whoops.
You don't really think about that, your concert promoter, you're responsible for a lot of things.
Yeah.
But when something like that happens, your stomach has to turn because you're thinking, a lot of people could get hurt right now.
Seriously, yeah. This is bad.
Not good.
It's very bad.
No, I've had my stomach turn a number of times at shows because of weather or riots or,
One of us shows up.
Bad behavior. Yeah, no one shows up. That's a good one.
I mean, one of us shows up.
That's the worst.
One of us shows up. Where the hell is everybody?
Yes, I've always said I've been to weddings that have had more people there than some of my concerts.
Oh, wow.
I've had some stiffs, no question about it.
Which one stands out the most?
I'll say the biggest surprise I've ever had was when I brought Loggins and Messina into Oakdale. And I booked the show, and I thought it was a great show to do. They had headlined the New Haven Coliseum a number of times. They were great back in the 70s. One of my favorite artists, actually, and Kenny Loggins himself was a good friend.
Yeah.
And I was so excited to bring them back on their return, and it stiffed. Only about 2,000 people showed up.
Ooh.
So that was a bad one.
That sounds like a lot.
It does to me, yeah.
No, well, we hold 4,500 at Oakdale, so that was very disappointing.
Okay, so there was room. Yeah.
I remember Jay Giles' band. They reunited in 1999, and they always did giant business in Connecticut. And I called up the agent. I'll pay you what you want. They gave me this giant number. I said, oh, that's fine. I think we'll do great. Just give me a Saturday night. I want a Saturday night. And only about 4,000 out of 25,000 people showed up.
Ow.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was a bad night, too.
Sorry I'm making you relive this now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all right. I'll see you next year.
Let's talk to Daniel in Middletown.
Nice. Hi.
Hey.
Hi. Oh, my God. You guys, long-time listener, first-time caller. Oh.
Hold on. And, 1 second. Daniel, hold on. I just got a text from Jim Bozzi.
Okay.
As you were talking about Loggins and Messina, Jim.
Uh-huh.
Jimmy.
I'm afraid for this.
He texts two words. The worst.
A little color commentary.
Well, you know, that show was, I think, about 2004, 2005, and it's still a running joke in our office. Anytime I book a stiff, they come in, and I book stiff still, that shows that don't do well, and Bozzi will come in and go, Loggins and Messina.
Oh.
Well, it's like the Titanic.
Yeah, we unearthed that one. Yeah,
it's bad.
Oh, no boy.
But all bookers book stiffs. We're not perfect at that.
Wow.
That's right. You're not fortune tellers.
Yeah.
No.
Daniel in Middletown. Go ahead.
Oh, my God. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome.
Oh, God, you guys are fantastic. How you doing, Mr. Koplik?
Fine, thanks.
Okay, Jimmy. I went to a Stevie Ray Vaughan, Allman Brothers, and Charlie Daniels in one night. It was a first-come, first-serve outdoor
that
venue.
That was a bad night. That was a bad night.
Uh-oh.
It rained like the bejesus.
Yeah.
It rained like you wouldn't believe. And the girl in front of me took off her bra and her shirt.
Car raindrops?
And I gave her a hug from the back, and she's like, "Are you having fun?" And I was like, "Absolutely!" And she threw the bra on the stage, and they grabbed it. I think it was when the Allman Brothers were on, and it was just amazing. The music was like breathless, and every time I hear a Stevie Ray Vaughan song, I'm like, dude, I was there. Oh my God, it rained like you wouldn't believe. It was great.
Girls are taking off their shirts.
Every time she's a bra.
Wait. You think of the rain before the hug? What's wrong with you? And by the way, were you 12 like Jeremy when this happened?
Right. How old were you?
Maybe 14, 15.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, man.
It might have been the first time.
Right. That's right.
I mean, I was just like in awe. I was just like, oh my God, this is fantastic. I mean, they were like bigger than pontoons.
Wow.
Okay.
It was just fantastic.
Well, your hands were only 14-year-old hands, so they might not have been.
Right. That's a great point.
She was quite buoyant.
Yeah, that is a good point. Yes, absolutely. It was a fantastic night. Even though it rained, I enjoyed myself so much. It was
now,
fantastic.
Do you remember that I flipped all the bands around that day? That night. It was at New Britain. It was in New Britain at Willowbrook
Park. Right, correct.
It was at Willowbrook Park. And because it was raining so badly, Charlie was the headliner. Charlie Daniels was the headliner. Stevie Ray Vaughan was the middle act. And Greg Allman Band was the opening act. Friends with all three. All three were good friends. And I said, listen, most people are here to see Charlie because he's the headliner.
Right.
I got them all in the trailer together. And I said, is everybody all right if we flip the show? Because people are not going to stand in the rain for 6 hours to hear the headliner go on. So all three artists agreed to do it. So I put Charlie on first. I put Stevie on second. And then Greg Allman Band closed the show.
Wow.
So I flipped the show.
Right, right. And I remember Charlie was using the F-bomb, the rain, you know, and the crowd was going with it and stuff like that. Yes, I do remember that they went on first.
Who was on when the bra came off?
I think when Greg Allman came on.
Late in the night.
Really it was distracted, yeah.
It was a full concert of imbibing by that point.
One concert!
All right, thank you, Daniel.
I really, You're welcome. Thank you, guys. You guys are fantastic.
Thank you.
You're fantastic. Jimmy Coplick, Live Nation on the show. We got a text. Is anyone replacing Three Doors Down on the tour with Creed?
The answer is yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And I assume we'll be announcing it shortly.
Oh.
Gotcha.
Is it someone we'd be familiar with?
Yes.
No.
Yes. I think people would be very happy with who it is.
Oh.
The Doors. No, it's good. Nothing. Can I keep it door themed?
No, I don't think it's... am I a Doors fan? No, I'm a mediocre Doors fan, but no, it's somebody really good. They replaced somebody with... replaced Three Doors Down with somebody equally as popular.
Nice.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, awesome.
Great.
Yep.
Pickles at the DMV.
Pickles?
Hey, so I was 14 years old. It was my first concert ever. It was 1986, the New Haven Coliseum, and it was Van Halen. Ooh. And... it was a funny story because...
Your first night or second night?
It was the second night.
Okay.
I think
the guitar solo in the movie is from the second night.
Nice.
Yes. And that guitar solo, that's like so famous now. Anyway, I saw that and it blew my mind. But the funny thing is, so I was pretty close to the stage and Eddie Van Halen kept throwing his picks out into the crowd. And... one came flying close by, and there was a big dude in front of me, and the pick fell to the ground, and we both went down, and we knocked heads, and I almost passed out.
Yeah.
He got the pick, and I was sitting there on the ground. I'm like, oh, man. So he felt really bad, and he gave me the pick. So nice. I had Eddie Van Halen's guitar pick.
Damn! Right. From that night. By the way, there's a movie.
Yeah.
Of that concert.
Right. Can't talk right anymore, but he has a pick.
Don't ever give that pick up.
Oh, no. No way. No way. That's it's actually, I have it in a little plastic case, and it's hidden in my room, so.
It's got my blood on it.
Do you remember the opening act?
I don't remember the, it was Baby Animals?
Nope. Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Oh.
BTO.
Oh, okay. I thought it might have been Baby Animals.
You did hit your head that night.
That's true.
Your excuse.
Yeah, but as a 14-year-old, seeing them for the first concert ever, I mean, that was mind-blowing.
That's a great first concert.
Well,
yeah.
Doesn't suck.
Yeah, that's it.
Been here.
Thank you, Pickles.
Oh!
Yeah. Two coconuts in it. Jimmy, did you know they were going to be filming for a movie?
Yes, we did. We actually had to take all their clothing to the laundry the next day because they had to wear the same clothes each night on stage because they didn't know whether they would use the first night's footage or the second night's footage in the film. So finding in 1986 a cleaner that can do it all within an hour was really a hard project to figure out.
Right.
So finally we did. So they wore the same clothes each night.
All that rock star DNA in your fingers.
Yeah.
it's all moist.
I believe that was their first concert after the release of 5150.
Oh, wow.
You know, I think you're right. And the irony is David Lee Roth played the New Haven Coliseum earlier that year. Because he was not the lead singer.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. He was
January.
Was he
year.
Doing the Eat 'Em and Smile tour then? I think so.
Yeah, I think it was two. I think he did that Beach Boy, California Girls, I think was his big hit.
Oh, okay. That's the EP.
Yeah.
Crazy from the Heat.
Right.
Yeah, Tesla opened up for David Lee Roth
in
January of 86. And then Van Halen said, screw David, we're coming and doing two nights and show him who's bigger.
So, yeah. They did. Right.
So, just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of David Lee Roth, any news on a tour and a second leg and... him coming to Connecticut?
No, it sounds to me like they're going to wait for him to go out on the road and see how he handles the road, and then hopefully we'll see an October run. If there's an October run, we'll put him into Oakdale.
Bobby in Stratford.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hi. I have two, and Phil said I could use them both. So
we don't have time. Those are Phil.
Okay. Then I'll try the one that hopefully is a good time.
Give us the shortest one, please.
Yes.
okay, Charlie Daniels at Oakdale. I have no idea what the year was. Probably the late 90s. It was I was sat in behind the orchestra pit, so I could see them warming up the golden fiddle for The Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Cool. The National Golden Fiddle.
Oh, that is the shortest story. Great. Very that's short. Exactly what we needed.
Right, we're stunned.
Thank you. Jimmy, you ever have someone like Charlie Daniels like lose a golden fiddle or a cane or like, you know, something cool like they left behind a guitar or something?
10-gallon hat?
Not that I'm aware of, because they would have come to me for sure if that was the case. So yeah. No, I'm not aware of anybody losing anything like that.
Yeah, the golden fiddle. Yeah, like, has anyone seen the golden fiddle?
Some kid found it.
That seems like, yeah, I feel some like we need Johnny. This one.
Are you Johnny?
Well, Jimmy, thank you, and we'll see you tonight.
Yep, see you tonight, guys.
Military veterans and active duty service members, you could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.